26 through 30, Alaska Railroad Corporation, Seward Cruise Ship Dock, Terminal Planning and Design for $300,000, Seward Dock Safety Enhancements for $1.2 million. Jumping to page 3, lines 11 through 16, the Huna Dock Company for Inner Point Sophia Phase 1 New Dock Mooring Buoys, $2 million. And Outer Point Sophia Safety Improvements, $500,000. Jump into page 4, lines 4 and 5, City of Ketchikan, Cruise Ship Berth 4 Dock Expansion, $2 million. The available funding in the cruise ship vessel passenger tax account is $7.5 million, and the appropriations listed total $6 million. Going back to page 3. Lines 20 to 24 reduces the appropriation.
Go down just a little bit. I can only write so fast.
Mr. LeBoult.
Thank you.
Yeah. On page 3, lines 20 to 24, the appropriation to the Inner Island Ferry Authority is reduced by $135,000, and that reduction is replaced by a reappropriation in section 37 of the bill, bringing the total to the same as the original request of $250,000. On page 3, line 25 and 27, the Marine Exchange of Alaska appropriation is reduced from $600,000 to $400,000. This brings it in line with FY17 funding. On page 3, line 30, Anchorage Police Department for patrol of the Seward Highway between Anchorage and Indian. There is also intent language associated with that, that the municipality and the troopers coordinate on patrol. On page 5, line 4, there's a $20 million appropriation from the Capital Income Fund to the Office of the Governor for statewide agency deferred maintenance. This carries out the intent of Senate Bill 107. On page 5, line 6, there's intent language in line with the governor to prioritize deferred maintenance in their distribution of funds. On page 6, line 32, there's an appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation for headquarters renovation. That's $4,050,000, and that's funded with APFC receipts. Page 7, line 19, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The Supplemental Housing Development Program was reduced from $3 million to $2.25 million. This brings it in line with FY17 funding levels.
Which line was that on page 7?
Page 7, line 19.
Thank you.
Moving down to line 21, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Teacher Health and Public Safety Professionals Housing was reduced from $1.75 million to $1 million. This is in line with FY17 funding levels. On page 7, line 31, the Alaska Marine Highway System Vessel Overhaul Funding Source was switched from general funds to marine highway vessel replacement funds, and the total was reduced by $1 million.
I'm sorry, where was that at?
That is on page 7, line 31.
It was reduced by $1
million? It was reduced by $1 million, and there was the fund source change.
Thank you.
On page 8, line 4, appropriation for state equipment fleet vessel vehicle replacement was changed from $15 million to $12.5 million. Page 8, line 13, reduced federal program match from $58 million to $12 million. This is also reflected same page, line 10, and these funds are covered by reappropriations in later sections of the bill. Though they're, even with those reappropriations, it's still a deduction of $2.8 million from governor's request. Page 9, line 11, $5 million was added from the Capital Income Fund to the University of Alaska for deferred maintenance. Items that do not appear in the budget that were in the governor's request was an appropriation to Life Donor Services, and that is because that item has been moved to the operating budget. And public and community transportation state match of $1 million was also removed.
Mr. LeBlanc, what page in line?
These are items that don't appear in the bill because they were in the governor's request but are not in the Senate version.
Representative Seaton.
Sure. The appropriation to Life Alaska Donor Services, that was in $80,000, and that was agency receipts, and that was removed from the capital budget because it was moved to the operating budget as it's a reoccurring expenditure.
And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Representative Guttenberg?
The Chair, if Mr. LeBeau could, or you could get us a copy of these things that were changed and where they were changed to, that would help.
Sorry, can you repeat that one more time, just with the noise in the back? Can you repeat that again, Representative Guttenberg?
It would be my pleasure. If you could get us a copy of the things that are not in the budget or things that have been changed in other places, that would be appreciated.
We'll get that to the full committee. Mr. LeBeau?
And the second thing that does not appear in Section 1 that was in the governor's request is the public and community transportation state match, and that's $1 million.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson?
Was that the only million? Was there any other funds anyplace else in operating or capital on these matching, or is that $1 million just kind of deletes everything from them?
For that match, that is the only funding.
Thank you.
And in case members aren't aware, that is funding provided by the states to communities to make their own federal match. Section 2 of the bill is just the breakout of funding by agency, and Section 3 is the breakout of funding statewide.
By agency.
Section 4 of the bill is the supplemental capital appropriations, which was a separate bill, but the Senate rolled into the capital budget. Some items that were not included in the supplemental request was a reappropriation from the Fairbanks Avenue Project, Arctic Strategic Transportation and Resources Project, and a reappropriation from the Juneau Access Project and Transportation Infrastructure Enhancement in Greater Lynn Canal.
So that's, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
That's Fairbanks University Avenue. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, what was the last one? The transportation.
Mr. Chairman, that was Transportation Infrastructure Enhancement in Greater Lynn Canal Area. In the governor's request, Juneau Access was reappropriated to this purpose and ferry construction purposes. And the Senate removed that. Section 5 is the breakout of those appropriations by agency, and Section 6 is the breakout of those appropriations by statewide funding. Section 7 is the supplemental operating items proposed by the governor. And Section 8 is the breakout of funding by agency for appropriations made in Section 7. And Section 9 is the breakout by statewide funding.
Mr. LeBeau, can you also cite the page numbers to Section 8 is where?
Page 39.
Oops. sorry. Section 8 is page 39 through 44. And Section 9 is pages 45 through 47. Sections 10 through 19 are primarily the governor's requested supplemental language, and I'll go through those item by item. Section 10, page 48, line 1, Department of Administration for Labor Contract Negotiations and Arbitration Support is $792,000, and it extends the lapse date through fiscal year 18. Section 10B, line 7, is a reappropriation of $3 million from the Department of Public Safety for the Alaska Land Mobile Radio System. Section 11, page 48, line 12, Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, there's an appropriation of $630,000 of federal receipts to the Division of Insurance for Health Insurance Enforcement and Consumer Protection. The grant is for fiscal years 17, 18, and 19. Section 12, page 48, line 17, Department of Environmental Conservation, appropriation from the general fund of $5,740,000 to fulfill the terms of the settlement in State versus Williams Alaska Petroleum, Inc., also referred to as the Flint Hills Refinery Settlement. Section 13, page 48, line 22, Department of Health and Social Services, Medicaid language necessary to cover potential changes from program shortfalls in fiscal year 17. Subsection B of that on line 28 is federal receipt authority for Medicaid program of $238,500,000. Section 14, page 48, line 31, through page 49, line 5, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, a reappropriation to the department in the amount of $213,155 for deferred maintenance, renewal, and repair of equipment. Section 15, page 48, line 6, Department of Law, subsection A is judgments and settlements broken out with their total of $228,671. Language that funded the Planned Parenthood judgment was removed by the Senate. Subsection C on line 21 extends the LAP provisions to include fiscal years 18 and 19 for the reappropriation of $2 million to the department for outside counsel and experts for the state share of interim remedial actions to protect health, safety, and welfare of people in the North Pole area for fiscal years 14 through 19. Section 16, page 48, line 30, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, $5,500,000 appropriated from the general fund for fulfilling terms of the signed consent agreement and final order with the United States Environmental Protection Agency regarding decommission and remediation of Class 5 injection wells. This was reduced from $8 million to $5.5 million. Section 17, page 50, line 4, debt and other obligations. Subsection A reduces the amount for early redemption on debt related to international airport revenue bonds by about $21 million. Section 17B, page 50, line 26, reduces the amount of debt service in the Goose Creek Correctional Center by $655,500. This is due to savings associated with refinancing. Section 17C, page 51, line 3, this appropriates $745,000 for the cost associated with issuing previously authorized general obligation bonds. Section 17D, page 51, line 7. If federal receipts are insufficient to cover international airports the deficient amount can be borrowed from the general fund. Section 17E, page 51, line 13, allows the repayment in the previous section D if necessary as a result of IRIS functionality. The accounting system, not the part of the I. Section 18, page 51, line 18, fund capitalization. $3 million is appropriated from the general fund to the disaster relief fund. Subsection B on line 20, $288 million is appropriated from the statutory reserve fund to the oil and gas tax credit fund to pay outstanding tax credit liabilities. This is a new section added by the Senate.
Going too fast.
Section 19, page 50, line 23, fund transfers, revises the date and amount to be transferred to the oil and hazardous substance prevention account in the oil and hazardous substance prevention and response fund. Change is on page 52, lines 1 and 2, subsection 3. Section 20, page 52, line 4, federal and other program receipts. Standard federal receipt authority language for agencies to receive federal funds and other debt authority from the legislative budget and audit. Section 21, page 52, line 13, insurance claims. The amounts to be received in the settlement of insurance claims are appropriated to the general fund for state insurance catastrophe reserve account or appropriate state agency to mitigate the loss. Section 22, page 52, line 18, National Petroleum Reserve. Alaska Impact Grant appropriated to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for capital project grants under the NPRA Impact Grant Program. This year's grants total almost $1.4 million and will be distributed to the City of Barrow, the City of Wainwright, and the City of Anaktuvik Pass. Section 23, page 53, line 29. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation amends the fiscal year 18 operating budget, reducing the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation dividend that is deposited into the general fund by the capital and operating that are made in fiscal year 18 using a portion of the AHFC dividend, essentially allowing them to retain a part of the dividend that they pay us for internal capital projects, rather than sending us the entire dividend and the appropriation being made back to them from the general fund. Section 24, page 53, line 4, Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, reappropriations for Alaska Energy Authority electrical emergencies not to exceed $330,000. Subsection B on page 53, line 10, reappropriations of the unexpended and unobligated balance to the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, estimated to be $3.2 million, to the Alaska Energy Authority for Rural Power System Upgrades. There is contingency language in section 41 of the bill requiring a 50-50 match. Section 25, page 53, line 13, Department of Corrections, reappropriations from the State Library and Archives and Museum to the underground storage tank upgrades not to exceed $1,850,000, and same reappropriation to a new purpose, subsection B, line 19, for deferred maintenance, renovation, repair, and equipment not to exceed $740,000. Section 26, page 53, line 25, through page 55, line 28. Department of Education and Early Development, its reappropriations of past major maintenance projects that are going back into the major maintenance grant fund. The amount is estimated to be $3.5 million. Section 27, page 55, line 29. Department of Fish and Game, reappropriation for vessels and aircraft maintenance, repair, and upgrades, not to exceed $500,000. Section 28 on page 56, line 7. Department of Health and Social Services, reappropriations to deferred maintenance, renovation and repair of and equipment for the Alaska Pioneer Homes, not to exceed $773,432. Subsection B on line 17 is deferred maintenance, renovation, repair, and equipment for facilities other than the Alaska Pioneer Homes, not to exceed $382,143. Section 29, page 57, line 27, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, reappropriation for deferred maintenance, renewal, and repair, and equipment, not to exceed $550,000. Section 30, page 57, line 6. Appropriations from the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund to the Department of Law, $5 million to hire additional prosecuting attorneys. This is only for fiscal year 18. Section 31, page 57, line 9, Department of Natural Resources, a reappropriation for the National Recreation Trails Federal Grant Program, not to exceed $150,000. Section 32, page 57, line 15, Department of Public Safety, appropriations from the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund to the Department of Public Safety, $10 million to hire additional state troopers. This is only for fiscal year 2018. Section 33, page 57, line 18, Department of Revenue, subsection A, appropriation from the general fund to the tax division for reprogramming the tax revenue management system and revenue online portal. This is associated with House Bill 111, and the amount is $1.2 million. It is contingent on the passage of House Bill 111, and that contingency language is found in Section 41. Subsection B on line 21 is an appropriation to fund the tax division for reprogramming the tax revenue management system and revenue for the online tax portal. This is associated with the motor fuel tax, and it's $50,000 and is contingent on passage of the motor fuel tax. That contingency language is also found in Section 41. Section 34, page 57, line 24, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. It's a reappropriation for the Eisenbeck Road Project, not to exceed $10 million. Subsections B, C, and D are reappropriations of federal highway match. And I could go through them item by item, or that brings us to subsection E, which is on page 58, line 19. And the unexpended estimate of a balance of $281,393 from the Heidelberg Small Boat Harbor is reappropriated to the Harbor Facility Grant Fund. Subsection F is on page 58, line 24. That is also Federal Highway Match Fund and estimated to be $30,500. And reappropriations start on page 58, line 27, through page 70, line 3. There are 118 reappropriations here. And I can go through them item by item, or?
Just wondering. I think we'll pass, Mr. LeBoule.
Thank you, though. Thank you. So that'll bring us to Section 34. Well, it's still Section 34, but we're on subsection G now. And this is page 70, line 4. And this goes through page 71, line 31. And this is cleanup language associated with old appropriations that have not been closed. And basically, it just tells them to clean up these old things so that we don't have them on the books. Page 72.
Mr. Chairman, just real quick.
Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson.
So on these cleanups, are you talking about federal dollars that might still be out there, or state, or a combination thereof?
Section 34 deals with federal dollars associated with the Federal Highway Program. Subsection H on page 72 is federal aid for the aviation and rural airports.
I mean page 70, when you were talking about G,
mm-hmm.
you were talking about that was a cleanup. I'm just trying to find out, is it a cleanup because we have additional state funding that's still out there, we don't know whether it's still being utilized, or federal money that we still may be able to utilize, or both?
In subsection G, that is just federal. But there are several of these cleanup items in subsections, and some of them are state, some of them are federal, and they go to various airport and road programs.
Okay, thank you.
And I can go over each of those sections or just move past the cleanup.
I just wanted to see what we were cleaning up.
Please. Representative Seaton.
So, Mr. Chair, just to be clear then, there, some of this unexpended balance is, this is all federal money, or is there state money associated with it that is not swept?
There is in subsection I, general fund authorization, but we do not expect there to be any funds there. It's just empty authorization that needs to be taken off the books.
Thank you.
There is language that if extra funding is found available, that it be put into the Federal Highway Match Program.
I'd like to also note that we're joined earlier by Representative Drummond in the audience, and then we also have Representative Stutes. Thanks for being here. Please proceed, Mr. LeBoule.
On page 76, line 29, there's a $10 million appropriation from the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund to the Department of Transportation for road maintenance and plowing. This appropriation is only for fiscal year 18.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson and then Seaton.
Well, this one doesn't have the language as the other ones did, so the other two appropriations you talked about actually said for 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That language isn't on this one, so are you sure that this is not counted more like capital, that they can use it for 5 years, since it doesn't have the language for 2018?
Unless otherwise specified in the capital budget, any appropriation in the capital budget is a one-time appropriation.
Follow-up? I know it's a one-time appropriation, but I thought with most capital funding, they had 5 years to utilize it. And those other two that you talked about, law and public safety, specifically said for 2018. So I know it's a one-time appropriation. I'm just trying to figure out, like the other two where it specifically said they had to use it all in 1 year. Since this is the capital budget, would this be able to be spread out to 5 years like most capital projects or not?
Thank you, Representative Wilson, through the chair. It's not a capital project. It is a maintenance project. But that appropriation, what I meant by it's for fiscal year 18 is that is a one-time appropriation. They would be able to spend it over 5 years, the normal capital lapse.
Thank you. I just was trying to see how it was different.
Yes, thank you. I should have clarified that it's the appropriation is only an 18 appropriation.
Mr. LeBoule, which page and line number are we at?
That's page 76, line 29.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Section 35 on page 77, line 1, is a fund transfer. transfer of the large passenger vesicle gaming and gambling tax account to the Alaska Capital Income Fund. The estimated balance is $8.1 million. Subsection B is on line 4, and it appropriates $25 million from the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund to the Public School Trust Fund. Section 36, page 77, line 6, appropriates $37,500 for the Arctic Winter Games, Team Alaska, for participation in the 2008 Arctic Winter Games. There's contingency language on matching funding found in Section 41. Section 37, page 77, line 10, for House Districts 33 through 36, a reappropriation to the Inner Island Ferry Authority identified in Section 1 to bring the match or the total funding back to $250,000. This is the backfill mentioned earlier in Section 1. Section 38, page 77, line 16, Office of the Governor, reappropriations to the Office of the Governor for subsections A and B for facilities in state government efficiencies, efforts, and to pursue economic development opportunities for consideration at state and federal levels. The estimated combined total is $2.7 million. Subsection C is on page 78, line 16. And it is to advance state government efficiency efforts and to evaluate the current structure and funds for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, Alaska Energy Authority, and the Alaska Industrial Development. What's the A to stand for again?
And Export Authority.
Yeah, thank you. And it updates the date to include fiscal year 19. The estimated amount is $850,000. On page 79, line 13, subsection D, the cost associated with state government efficiencies and to pursue economic development and opportunities for consideration of state and federal levels, estimated to be $950,000.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson?
Can you just send us information, because that's the third time it's used in here, and I've asked a question. I have no idea what they're using the money for, so if there's any kind of backup that you can get to us so we can understand if that's a new program or what the money is supposed to be spent for, because it seems we keep putting more money in. It's almost $4 million now in the budget here, and I don't have any idea what it is.
Thank you, Representative Wilson, through the chair. We can try to get that from the Senate and provide it to the committee.
Thank you.
That brings us to Section 39, starting on page 79, line 24, reappropriations of legislative appropriations to legislative renovation projects and technology improvements. The estimated balance is $6.5 million. Section 40, starting on page 80, line 8, is lapse language. And that's for subsection A is the capital projects, insurance claims, and agency mitigation loss, and NPRA grants lapse. Subsection B is capitalization of funds. These appropriations do not lapse. And subsection C is capital projects lapse unless a fiscal year is otherwise specified. Section 41 is the contingency language. That's on page 80, starting on line 15. Subsection A is the contingency language for rural power system upgrades, and it's contingent on matching funds of an equal amount. Line 18 is subsection B, and it appropriates, it's the contingency language for the Division of Tax Reprogramming on House Bill 111, and it's contingent on the passage of House Bill 111, And subsection C, line 21, is the contingency language associated with the motor fuel tax bill. Section 42, page 80, line 27, are the effective dates for agency appropriations, debt and other obligations, fund capitalizations, fund transfers, and the motor fuel tax passage implementation. Page 43, section 80, line 29, is the effective dates for agency reappropriations, other reappropriations, and contingency language for the rural power system upgrades. And section 44, page 80, line 31, the effective date, except sections 39 and 40, take effect in July 1st, 2017.
Thank you, Mr. LeBoule. So we had scheduled public testimony for 1:30. We have a number of people who would like to testify. We also were told earlier that floor session would start at 2, which is in 2 minutes. I'm going to take a brief at ease to see there's the possibility that floor session was pushed back, so let's just take a brief at ease and find out here. Okay, House Finance back on record. Mr. LeBoule, if you could make a quick correction, and then we'll go into public testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On section 44, I had listed the wrong referenced sections, and it should be except as provided in section 42 and 43.
Thank you. Okay, so with that, I am going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 23, the capital budget. And I just would also like to add that folks can submit their written testimony to housefinance@akleg.gov. Again, no spaces in housefinance@akleg.gov. So with that, we will be limiting public testimony to 2 minutes per caller, as was advertised. And if folks would like to sign in, they can do so at your LIO or by calling in no later than, well, we've got listed 2 p.m. here, so we may, we'll revisit that here. But let's go ahead and move into our first testifier, and that is Fred Sturman at the Kenai LIO. Fred, if you're there, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your 2 minute testimony.
My name is Fred Sturman. I lived in Soldotna for, been up here for over 50 years. I just left North Kenai out there, and there's another service company just loading up, and we'll be leaving here this afternoon, headed for Wyoming. I suppose you know from what they indicated to me, in Wyoming they have 40 rigs are running now. They're backing up, and they're in business because they're being treated better in Wyoming, because most of that is not government land. Most of it is privately owned land. So it seems like there's quite a bit of drilling and stuff going on in the lower 48. The other thing is You guys took that $50 million, which I'm proud to see you take the $50 million away from the gas pipeline. You should take it all away. But you shouldn't be reappropriating it. You should be saving the money because it's going to get tougher here in a few years. The Kenai Peninsula Borough, with their new increase in values on the Kenai Peninsula, is taking about another $4 to $5 million. It depends on where they set the mill. It could go as much as $6.5 million out of the economy. The city of Kenai seems to be short of money. The sales taxes on the Kenai Peninsula, they lost $500,000 in the sales on here on the peninsula. I haven't checked with all the cities, but I'm sure all the cities' sales taxes are a lot lower than they was last year. So I'm just telling you right now is you need to still cut the budget. And I'm very disappointed that you guys are still giving government employees raises. And you have never, even with some of the stuff you had closed, you basically laid nobody off. The only way you guys can correct this is to start getting rid of some of the employees because that is your biggest expense. Remember, because you guys wasn't in legislation 15, 20 years ago, but the biggest problem we have is that the legislators and the state has promised a lot more to government than we can afford to pay today. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sturman. Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Sturman? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. We have two people here in the room here in Juneau. Elston Lawson, if you could please come to the table and put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Elston Lawson. I'm from Anchorage. I am here speaking on behalf of myself. And I am here to address one portion of the capital budget, which is the portion that was passed by the Senate yesterday, draining our savings accounts to provide $288 million worth of subsidies for oil companies. And I just don't know when we got into the business of guaranteeing the profitability or underwriting the risk for private oil companies in the state. But somehow that's become politically correct on the right side of the spectrum, and I want it to stop. And I think you folks here in the House are the thin blue line standing between what I consider to be a corrupt practice on the part of the Senate to adhere to the interests of oil companies who come up here and they drill. And they know darn well that they're taking a risk, and they make the investments. And it's not our job to underwrite those risks at the cost of our fundamental services or the diversification of our economy. And I would like to, if I could have permission to read a small part of a blog that was written by Brad Keithley. I know he's a great friend of this committee, but he wanted to give a profile of one of the beneficiaries of this $288 million subsidy, and in an article last year in China Daily, the newspaper reported glowingly on a Chinese company, Nuoxin's, investments in one of Alaska's small oil companies. Nuoxin strikes it rich with Alaska's investment. Nuoxin is now the largest shareholder in Nordak Energy, Inc., the owner of Smith Bay on the western north slope of Alaska, where the oil fields with up to 6 billion barrels of oil was recently discovered. Nordak, and presumably its investors, is one of those now in line for cash oil credits that are being paid ahead of statutory requirements. So basically what we're doing is we're making a decision, if we proceed with this, to choose the investors, underwriting the risk of investors coming into Alaska over the interests of the families of the state of Alaska, whose permanent fund dividends have been cut in order for us to help underwrite the interests of oil companies on the North Slope. That is not our role, and I am against that. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Lawson. And does the committee have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. Next up here in the room, we have Carla Hartz. Carla, if you could also put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. My name is Carla Hart. I'm from Juneau, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself. Excuse me, I was planning to be gardening today and dressed like that when I got up. I'm calling here to speak specifically on page 51, the $288 million appropriated from the Budget Reserve Fund to the oil industry. $288 million is a lot of money. I know you guys work with a lot of zeros. You work with a lot of money. $288 million, as I listened to the presenter go through the details in the budget, for some programs you're talking $10,000, you're talking $100,000, you're talking $1 million, and that really makes the difference for a program. We're taking $288 million and the best money that could be spent however you wanted, capital, operating costs, education, however you want, matching federal funds, and we're giving it to the richest industry in the state that's making a lot of profit. It makes no sense at all. People in the public don't understand and don't know to be as outraged with this because they don't get that we have this $288 million that you're giving to the oil industry. I urge you to take that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hart. Does the committee have any questions for Ms. Hart? Sorry, we've got one from Representative Guerra. Do you have a question?
Thank you, Chair. It's just only a statement. Obviously, there are two sides of that issue. I tend to be on your side, but also in the Senate operating budget, there's $75 million in oil tax credit payments, so it's a total of about $350 million that's in their two budgets.
Worse than I knew. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. And just to clarify for folks who might be watching on Gavel to Gavel, we're addressing the Senate's version of the capital budget, and that was something that they had put in. And so whether or not that's something that we address in our capital budget, we'll be looking at over the next few days. So next up, we'll go to the Fairbanks LIO, Wolfgang Falk. If you're there, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yeah, this is Wolfgang Falk. I live in Fairbanks since 1969, and I like to talk about the permanent fund dividend. You should quit it altogether, because the permanent fund dividend affected a lot of people because of the one-year requirement only to qualify for it to Alaska. And these people, they just came up here for that extra money. They come up and have kids, and the criminal element that is attracted likewise all overwhelmed our system as far as education goes, as far as the judicial system goes. And for that reason, I urge you to cut the dividend and eventually eliminate the dividend altogether, because what we need is attract young people that could help develop this country and do something productive. And we have so much on to offer here, mining and other ways. We shall not have a state which is a welfare state. So for that reason, I mean, I like the dividend too, but the dividend itself is actually ridiculous, because we pay twice taxes, once to state and once the individual, plus is it additional money if we invest it in sharing or matching funds with the federal government, we could all benefit by improving roads and other projects. So even it's a very unconventional thing to say, the dividend program should be scrapped. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Falk. Does the committee have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Falk. Next up, we will move to the Anchorage LIO. And Colleen Doshkin, are you there?
Yes.
If you could put your name and your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, Seaton, and members of the House Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today. My name is Colleen Doshkin, and I'm the administrator for the Association of Alaska Housing Authorities, otherwise known as AHA. The AHA membership consists of the 14 regional housing authorities, RHAs, who represent 196 tribes in Alaska. I'm here to testify today about the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's Supplemental Housing Development Grant Program. The AHA membership acknowledge and give thanks for the amount remaining in the program. We recognize the difficult funding environment, and although the regional housing authorities have a demonstrated need between $12 and $15 million annually for this program, we respectfully request the Supplemental Housing Development Grant Program be funded at a minimum level of $3 million. Excuse me. The Supplemental Grant Program provides up to 20% of the total development costs for energy efficiency, water and sewer, electrical distribution, and access roads for housing projects. That's a federal to state funding ratio of 5-to-1. The supplemental program is a wise investment of state funds, and when combined with additional resources, results in a critical boost to local economies throughout the state. The program has been an incredible value to Alaska's affordable housing by providing development gap funding. In many cases, the supplemental grant is a make-or-break source that allows a project to move forward. Funding housing projects requires layering piece after piece into a capital stack that works. If you remove any of the pieces, the project can't happen. Funds such as the AHFC Supplemental Grant Program are key to creating the foundation needed to add funding pieces to the stack. On behalf of the regional housing authorities, covering every corner of the state, we respectfully request your support for the Supplemental Housing Development Grant Program to be funded at a minimum level of $3 million for safe, sanitary, affordable housing development. Thank you. And I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Dishkin. Are there any questions of the Finance Committee? Seeing no questions, we'll move to the next testifier, Chris Cleric. I was going to say welcome. I see you're calling all the way from Nome, but it looks like you're in Anchorage today. If you're there, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Chris Kolarok. I am the President and CEO of Bering Straits Regional Housing Authority, based in Nome and serving the housing needs of 17 tribes around the Bering Straits and Martin Sound. Co-Chairman Foster, Co-Chairman Seaton, and members of the Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here to speak with you about the AHFC Supplemental Housing Development Program and respectfully request you fund it at a minimum of $3 million. Regional housing authorities are primarily funded by federal appropriations, but those funds are less than they used to be. 20 years ago, our appropriation from Washington was essentially the same as this year's, meaning that inflation has cut our budget in half. Our people are feeling the pain. In both Brevard Mission and Savunga, we learned of homes with 19 people sharing 3 bedrooms. The AHFC Supplemental Housing Development Program allows us to be innovative and helps fill a never-shrinking gap to address these critical housing issues. Furthermore, housing authorities are major economic drivers of all of Alaska. For our Savunga project this summer, we have engaged engineers and designers from Anchorage. We have purchased supplies and equipment from SBS, who is pulling material from their statewide retail network. We have purchased trusses, pipe, and structural panels from 3 manufacturers in Chugiak, Big Lake, and Wasilla. The other 13 regional housing authorities are similar in their impact on Alaska's economy. In fact, 90% of our collective funds are spent on Alaska workers or with Alaska businesses. Funding the AHFC Supplemental Housing Development Program at a minimum of $3 million is a wise investment for our economy. thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of the committee for Mr. Clerick? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll move over to the TOC LIO. Scott McManus, if you're there, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott McManus, and I'm the superintendent of Alaska Gateway School District. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee this afternoon. I'd like to thank the House for their support of education and for holding strong on in this difficult time. I want to say that as a school district, we're not unaware that there have been that we have budget issues and that we have to do our part to address them, and that we've been planning for this contingency that was inevitable for a number of years. Many of you know that we've implemented biomass heating systems and power supplement systems in a couple of our schools. We have this year implemented pay freezes. We're not filling positions. We're probably going to have to cut our music and our counseling programs this year. And I want the committee to know that in spite of some of the information that seems to be coming from some quarters, we do not pay our teachers more than other states. In fact, this year, well, we're trying to attract teachers, quality teachers to our district. I've had them actually end the interview once they learned what our pay scale was, because they could make so much more outside, which is a frustrating experience when we're trying to put together a good team for our students. And I just would like to say that I think it's important that you hold the line. We're doing good things in our schools. I spoke yesterday. I was the keynote speaker at the University of Alaska commencement ceremony, where we had one of our students in high school get their associate degree. Next week we'll be walking down the aisle to get their high school diploma. It's not the first time that's happened. We're doing a lot of good things in our schools, and we're doing it because of your support. And I want you to know how much we appreciate that, and urge you to hold the line with the budget. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. Are there any questions of the committee? Representative Guerra.
Sorry, Mr. McManus, so just really quickly, thank you for your testimony. Are you losing your music and counseling positions based on a flat budget, and will you lose more with the Senate's proposal, or is it the Senate's proposal that would cause you to lose those?
Well, at this point, we're planning on the worst-case scenario, so we're losing it because of planning for the worst case. So, yes, because of the Senate's budget.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll move to the off-nets here. We have George Pierce from Kisilov. If you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yes, my name is George Pierce. I'm calling from Kisilov, Alaska, and I'm representing myself. Happy Mother's Day to all you women out there, moms or not. SB 23, do us a favor. Throw this into the trash and go home. You know, you got mega projects, you're taking money out, the slush funds. They want to keep all the slush fund money in there on certain projects, take it all out, put it in there, and pay for your debt that you've created. They raided a permanent fund. They only have a 1% cut, and they took but a 50% of the PFT. What will they pull out of their hat next year? Will the recalculation of the PFT be up next year? Here's another one. They're willing to drain and yet deplete our account to pay an industry $288 million when we can't afford it and we're in a deficit and we can legally pay $70 million. All this for big oil. We see who they really work for, don't we? You know, this Senate is a joke. We got $25 million for election, but yet the Senate is proposing to cut state school funding by nearly 6%. Is that called give in one hand and take out of the other? You're looking for revenue. Let's start with the $700 million tax credit given to all industry, to the oil industry every year. Did that 26 barrels a day equal to $7 million? $700 million, you know. listen to your analyst. Correct all the giveaways, and we'd have more for schools, police, education, etc. Nonprofits being state-funded must stop. Nonprofits have become too expensive, starting salaries at $45,000. That's more than a state worker does, gets paid doing the same job. The S corporations, the LLCs, are exempt from state income tax, that a $50 million loss to our state. And now you got three major oil companies becoming the LLCs for more lost revenue. Community revenue sharing, it has to stop. You guys have to cut your spending here. It's ridiculous. I'm not impressed with this. This is all. We're spending the wrong. We're sending the wrong message to our gas investors. Where we're supposed to be starting and having a friendly environment for production and stuff, but here we are taking the money out of the pipeline.
Mr. Pierce, if you could please wrap up.
How come they don't take the money out of that Juno Road down there that nobody wants, huh? The voters said no, but some people, like Ms. McKenna, want to keep that in there.
Mr. Pierce, if you could please wrap up.
Thank you for taking my testimony, and throw this thing in the trash, and you guys go home.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Does the Finance Committee have any questions for Mr. Pierce? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next up on the offense, we have James Kowalski from Fairbanks. If you could also put yourself on the record and proceed.
Hello, this is Jim Kowalski in Fairbanks, Alaska. I would like to speak to you about the supplemental appropriation, I guess it is called, for the Eisenbeck Road, which I understand is about $10 million. I want to tell you this is a no. We've already spent more than $50 million to solve the medical evacuation considerations of King Cove. These are federal tax monies. You and I paid for this. There was an upgrade of $30 million plus dollars for the health clinic in King Cove. There was tens of millions of dollars already spent on a road partially north. There was $9 million spent on a hovercraft to evacuate. There were 30 evacuations, I understand, up to 2010. All were successful. The one was lost. It's about an 18-minute trip from one side of the bay to the other. This proposed road would evacuate medical evacuations from King Cove. It would take about 2 hours. So roughly $52,000 per resident of King Cove have already been spent. This evacuation was bought and paid for. Meanwhile, we have this appropriation from the state of Alaska being proposed. The maintenance on this road that if it were built, I understand, would be almost $700,000. It would fall to the state of Alaska. That would be roughly the cost of operating a hovercraft, which I understand was given away. It was an expensive operation, but yet think about the maintenance it requires to you guys, that is to us, to maintain that road. I visited King Cove some years back in late September, arriving in the small airfield outside of King Cove, transported into King Cove. This was following a typical, I assume, typical Aleutians blizzard. The driver of this little school van could not keep the van on the road. So evacuating medical evacs to Cold Bay from King Cold over this proposed road, especially in the wintertime, would be crazy. I mean, it would be dangerous. I don't understand the rationale. Well, I do. In fact, the original idea for the King Cold Road was to promote the secret industry. And I think this still remains the main justification for it. Peter Pan Seafood would love to see the road. I'm saying don't do it. It's a crazy expenditure. It's not justified. Again, the evacuation has been bought and paid for. It has been successful. The proposed road will be dangerous. We'll be 18 minutes by a hovercraft over to the Cold Bay side with the evacuation period, which was successful. It will be a two-hour drive at least on this proposed road.
This is not a great idea.
We're seeing hundreds of teachers being fired or losing their contracts because of the shortfall. You just heard from Scott in Polk with the problems of education. We have much, much greater needs for these monies that are in such short supply. I'm going to stop with that, but I'm a 46-year resident of Fairbanks, and may I just please say the idea of building this road, this new road, on top of everything else that has been done is absolute nonsense. I don't want to see it. It should stop now.
Thank you, Mr. Kowalski. Do we have any questions of the committee for Mr. Kowalski? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Abul Hassan from Anchorage. Mr. Hassan, if you could put yourself on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Thank you. Chair, committee members, first of all, if you don't hear this for the rest of the day, let me say thank you for being there on a Saturday and listening to these very important issues. I realize that we're talking about tens of millions of dollars, 10 million here, so
if you can,
etc.
If you could put your name and your affiliation on the record.
Yes, my name is Abul Hassan. I'm the Director of Public Transportation for the City of Anchorage. We are the largest such entity in the state of Alaska. Our ridership on our buses for fixed route is 4 million. And on the paratransit side, we're doing roughly 400,000. In terms of annual servicing. That does not include the large number of Vancouver programs that we run between Anchorage and the Valley and within intra-Anchorage itself. Just my background, I am a 20-year veteran in the industry, originating from Washington, D.C., having dealt with public transportation agencies like Washington Metro Transit, who have a budget of about $1 billion. Now, the reason that I mention that is because where public transportation goes, communities grow. And so my reason here is to simply stick out before you to put some things into perspective, which is that you have an allocation from the governor that could be put back on the bill. And the difference here is that even though for Anchorage we're talking about 225,000 out of the million, this is a portion of a larger match. This match enables the city of Anchorage and the municipality to get an additional $1 million from the feds. This is good money spent because who are the few folks who we're dealing with? We're dealing with individuals that rely on public transportation because they have no other means by which to get to a variety of different things, whether it might be their jobs or schools or even grocery shopping. So you're disproportionately affecting a large number of your own constituency by not allocating something as minute as $1 million in the grand scheme of things when you're discussing budgets that are tens to hundreds of millions of dollars. So I would implore you to please consider putting the money back into public transportation, even if it is just $1 million, because we do so much of match money. Now, again, I leave with you that I'm not here to talk about just buses. We're not in the bus business, per se. We're in the mobility business. What we do is we move people and enable people to move around town. And during this economic recession that Alaska is experiencing, ours is the only agency that has actually taken it upon itself to reduce our budget, not ask for any additional money, while making innovative changes that are actually making national headlines. Mm-hmm. So normally you don't think about public transportation when you think about Alaska. You just don't. But here we are making changes within Anchorage that are probably places us in half a dozen corporations or public transportation entities out of thousands in the U.S. because we are doing that level of efficiency.
Mr. Hassan, please wrap up.
Continue to do this. So I thank you for your time, and please reconsider.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have any questions for Mr. Hassan? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. We do have somebody here in the room who would like to testify. John Sonnen, if you're here, if you could please come to the table, put your name and your affiliation on the record, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Sir. My name is John Solman. I am the 19-year resident this July, or yeah, this July of Alaska, and I represent human civilization, civilized humans. I got worried when I turned on Gavel Gavel and saw you guys talking about the operating budget that you're not capitulating to the Senate aversion to the income tax. I know it's one of the pillars, and it's one of the things that will refute or deny or enable us to not have to rob transportation, education, everything else, assuming that the budget is a closed loop. I mean, if we're not going to have more revenues and you may have to take money from some of the vital services that I was at the rally outside yesterday with the protests, and it was for education. And it was sad to me that the electorate has to apply so much pressure to legislators to act in their constituents' interest and do the right thing, not take the money away from education. We need to produce more revenue somehow, and it's not, well, it's not to more tax credits to these, to the big oil people who, I know how important they are to the budget, but I also agree with that's where I think the source of more revenue should be found in remaking, if you will, clawing back some of these credits. But the closed-loop system means we need more revenue, and I'm just worried that the obstinance of Senator Kelly and the rest of the finance crew over there at the Senate might pay you guys to reconsider your income tax proposal, which I think is critical. It passes intact.
You could please wrap up, Mr. Solman.
That's it.
Great, thank you.
I agree with Doug. The other guy too, that this, if you guys being here today is great. I mean, it's all about effort and commitment. Definitely coming for you all. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Sonnen. Do we have any questions of the committee? Seeing no questions, thanks for coming in on a Saturday.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go back to the off-nets here. And we have Scott Anaya from Anchorage. If you could put your name, your affiliation on the record and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My name is Scott Anaya, calling from Anchorage, and just calling as a citizen and a small business owner here in Anchorage. I listened to the start of the meeting, and I got to thank you all on the Finance Committee for your work on this. My eyes were crossing just listening to just the changes. Let alone the whole entire bill in both bodies. So thank you for your work. Not easy as the session dragged along, I'm sure. You know, I guess I'm calling because what you folks do at this moment in our history is going to determine how bleak our financial future gets or how we begin to come out of this as a statewide community. So please, as you move along in these discussions and reconciliations between the two bodies, I urge you to stand strong against the Senate's proposal. You guys in the House, or you folks in the House, are our best shot at getting out of this recession as unscathed as possible. As a small business owner, the recession really hit last summer on the Main Street level. All of our retail neighbors and small businesses, restaurants, yoga studios, you name it, shoe sales, everybody was discussing what percentage of business was down by. And that picture didn't get better over the winter. Several businesses in the Anchorage area closed up shop, are talking about closing up shop, are talking about combining forces with other businesses to try and survive the next year or two, hopefully not longer. So we really stand at a crux, and you know, our small business owners are really looking for you to do the right thing. Taking the PFD is not that answer. That's probably, according to ICER and the other study that materialized, the worst thing you can do for the overall health of the economy. continuing oil taxes to the tune of $288 million, plus the additional 50 that Representative Bill mentioned a while back on this phone call meeting. Joining our savings account, it's unconscionable as we cut education opportunities for our children and their future. I urge you to scrap the oil tax credit program altogether. You know, if you need additional revenues, I urge you to consider an income tax no further cuts to the PFD. Let's try and not do further damage to the health of the economy. We have studies that show the path forward to do additional revenues. We want our children's schools fully funded. We want a healthy and vibrant community for our small businesses like mine to thrive. And with that, I'll cut my testimony so you all hopefully can get out of there on a Saturday.
Thank you, Mr. Anaya. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing no questions, thank you for being here. Pat Lavin from Anchorage, if you're there, if you could put your name, affiliation on the record, and proceed with your two-minute testimony.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. For the record, my name is Pat Lavin. I work in the Anchorage Office of Defenders of Wildlife, nonprofit conservation organization. I work on public land management and wildlife and habitat conservation issues. I want to join a couple of the other earlier callers in most of all saying thank you for your work to try to balance our budget. I really do appreciate it. I've lived here for 25 years and seen some lean times, but I think our current situation is usually the biggest challenge, fiscal challenge we've had in the state, at least in my time here, and the cuts to education and other critical services, just the change of the face of our government that we're watching happen before our eyes has been heartbreaking for a lot of us. And some of the other callers have spoken to what some of that means to them. I'm calling on one particular line item. I'm calling to urge you to not include the $10 million appropriation in the budget for the construction of the proposed Eisenbeck Road. There isn't time to kind of dig into the details of that or any individual project in this context, but I've submitted a comment letter. You should have it in your email box this morning that I really hope you will look at before making any final decision on that project. As one of a previous caller also spoke to some of those facts, just very briefly, the road is kind of as necessary as an emergency medical transportation, part of a transportation system, but it is neither necessary nor even sensible as an emergency transportation solution in that area. You know, and with the budget changes that we've seen, we are closing road maintenance stations in the state. We've laid off over 100 maintenance workers already, and I imagine that's not going to change anytime soon. And it just underscores how our precious dollars, our precious capital dollars, need to be very carefully invested in real priorities, state priority projects that serve well-defined state needs.
Mr.
This project doesn't meet that test. It will be expensive on top of a lot of money already spent on a solution that worked. So I beseech you, please look into it a little bit before authorizing the $10 million, which will be the tip of the iceberg that we wind up paying if we go this route. So I'll stop there. Thank you again so much for all your hard work toward balancing the budget. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. Does the Finance Committee have any questions for Mr. Lavin? Seeing none, thanks for your testimony. Let's now go to Rob Piku out in Mountain Village. Rob, if you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I can. My name is Rob Piku. I'm the superintendent of the Lower Yukon School District. I'd like to thank the members of the House and the committee for giving me this opportunity to speak. And I'd like to encourage the House members and the governor to stand strong in defending public education against the Senate bill's proposal to cut education by 5.6%, which would bring many, many districts in our state dangerously close to that implosion. Here in this school district, we are experiencing a $13.6 million structural deficit as a result of flat funding. We understand the fiscal crisis that we're in, and we have eliminated all the counselors from our programs, and we have cut our administrative staff by 60% in an effort to meet our structural deficit. I've been a teacher and a principal and a superintendent in both rural and urban Alaska for the past 20 years. On behalf of the Regional School Board, the families of the Lower Yukon School District, and the staff of the Lower Yukon School District, this testimony is in support of restoring the appropriation to the governor's recommended $1,750,000 for desperately needed teacher, health, and public safety housing. We are in support of restoring the appropriation for the following reason. In a recent university study published by Alaska Dispatch, it was suggested that teacher training across Alaska about $20 million per year. The Lower Yukon School District experiences an approximate annual 30% teacher turnover rate. The top two reasons given in exit surveys for teachers choosing to leave the district are personal safety and inadequate teacher housing. The Lower Yukon School District has a long history of settling grievances related to substandard teacher housing, along with associated legal fees. I personally conducted housing inspections in several villages. Some of the housing conditions have been neglected for many years as a result of inadequate finances and are frankly unacceptable. I'm in the process of working with our regional partners and using funding from our operating fund to build new and upgrade existing teacher housing. To date, in 2016-2017, the Lower Yukon School District has spent $4.3 million out of its operating fund, money that would otherwise go to students and instruction to renovate dilapidated and substandard teacher housing. We're building new teacher housing in Umanak to replace old asbestos-affected BIA buildings where teachers have been forced to live that flood every year due to a rising river. That construction project is costing the district $2.3 million for a sixplex that once again could otherwise be spent on badly needed upgrades to our instructional programs. For these reasons and many more, the Lower Yukon School District supports restoring the appropriation to the governor's recommended $1,750,000 for desperately needed teacher health and public safety housing. Maintaining and building teacher housing is a large expense for rural Alaskan school districts. The anticipated needs for the Lower Yukon School District is an additional 20 units for the next 5 years. Without adequate funding for AHFC, school districts will have no choice. Rural school districts will be forced to choose between investing in teacher housing or investing in technology and other instructional programs. I thank you very much for your time today, and I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Piku. Does the Finance Committee have any questions for Mr. Piku? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Susan Hansen out in Fairbanks. Susan, if you could also put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed. Oh, it looks like she is unavailable. Next, we have Mark Springer in Bethel. Mark, if you could please also put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Mark Springer. I'm calling from Bethel, and I'm representing the Tulik Sac Native community. It's a federally recognized tribe on the Kuskokwim River, one of the more isolated communities on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. We have a CAPSIS request in for about $300,000 for power plant upgrades. I don't see that in Senate Bill 23. I'd like to respectfully ask the committee to take a look at our request and consider inserting it into the the House version. This project is economic development for our community. We currently have two generators in the powerhouse generating individually about 150 kW, which is enough to run the village, but we do not currently have the capacity to supply power to the school, which we would really like to do, and the school district would like it as well. It would allow them to not have to run their own power plant all the time. It's a community sustainability issue. We consider that it's a legitimate capital appropriation, legitimate capital action by the legislature to help us maintain our essential community facility. The Tulip Sack, the village, and the village corporation in the last year have made a significant investment of their own funds in a joint effort to improve the capacity. We are purchasing a new engine, prime mover for our plant. We did have a significant amount of money, several $1 million, through AEA available a couple of years ago for planning for bulk fuel upgrades. That money was swept up into, I think it was called the parking garage, euphemistically, and so we lost that money. Our request is for two additional diesel engine generator sets and a 20 to 30,000 gallon double wall fuel tank to give us the ability to have sufficient fuel at hand throughout the year to run the powerhouse, to provide sustainable power to the community, including the school. So thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Springer. Does the committee have any questions? I guess I could maybe just make a note here. A few years ago, when the state was flush with funds, each district was provided some capital funds to provide for projects like these. It's been the practice of the legislature over the past few years now. We simply don't have the funds to do many of these projects in each district, and so there's actually been no discretionary funding and no reappropriation funding over the last few years. In all likelihood, that practice is probably going to continue, but certainly everything is taken on a case-by-case basis. So, I would say certainly continue to push for that. The discussions are being had, but I guess I just want to let the public know at large. So with that, Susan Hansen has come back online from Fairbanks. Susan, if you could proceed with your testimony, if you could put yourself on the record.
Okay, my name is Susan Hansen. I'm in Fairbanks. And I'm speaking as a resident and citizen, and I just want to say that I would advise the Senate to take out the $10 million for the road through the Eisenbeck Wildlife Refuge. And it was initially proposed, that road was initially proposed in the 1990s as a road to expedite shipping of seafood from the canneries of King Cove to Cold Bay, where the airport is. And it would take an hour and 50 minutes. They say that they want to use it for emergency transportation of patients. It is not really usable for that. And I think you should take the $10 million out of that. It's not right for taxpayers to be asked to pay it. And that's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Does the committee have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. We have two more testifiers online here. And so next up, we'll go to Joe Banta in Anchorage. If you could put your name and affiliation on the record and proceed.
Hi, yes, I'm Joe Banta. I'm fourth generation. I got four generations of my family, I guess, in Alaska, and I'm testifying as myself as a citizen and resident. First, thank you, folks, the community, for your work for this day. I appreciate the opportunity to express my strong support for ensuring adequate education funding and to urge you to reject any cuts such as those proposed by the Senate budget. If that Senate budget favors tax cuts for big oil over adequate funding of education for our Alaskan children, not to mention the other items that you heard of earlier, housing and other basic infrastructure needs. We need to fund public education adequately and eliminate these kind of cuts. We need to respect our education system and the future of our state, because education is providing our children with their future. On up to the university level, all of these areas have had significant cuts, and we need to invest in them, not undermine them. I also urge you to develop a comprehensive fiscal plan, including revenues, so that public education and the rest of our state economy have funding certainty. I appreciated the testimony of Mr. Lawson and Mr. Anaya. They had specific references to studies such as those by ICER that show that taking the PFD would very negatively affect the state economy. We need to look at reasonable analyses and studies like these to guide us as we develop that economic way forward. And if we're to weather the current economic downturn, we need the state legislature to work in a bipartisan manner to build new revenue streams to sustain our economy. And nothing is more important, again, than the educational needs of our children, because they are our future. I see solutions as increased oil taxes, elimination of oil tax credits, and implementation of an income tax. And please do not take anything from the PFD. Again, it's a great stabilizing force in our economy. The Senate's $350 million tax credit to multinational corporations is corporate welfare at its worst, and it is a disaster for our state. All the studies say it. We need to recognize it for what it is. And all this while we're still trying to recover from the $3.5 billion giveaway from Senator Sean Parnell in the Republican House a couple of years ago when they trashed ACES. It's our oil. And I guess my time is up, and I'll leave it at that, but again, thank you for your work.
Thank you, Mr. Banta. Does the committee have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. Our last testifier is Pam Good from Deltana. Pam, if you could put yourself on the record and proceed.
My name is Pam Good from Deltana. Thank you, members of the committee. Alaska's in a recession, and the reason we're in a recession is because we're trying to reset from a government spending bubble. So that means we need to cut spending. We need to cut the size of government. Please let Alaska reset, and let's build down. That's a very important term, because it makes us stronger, more efficient, more effective, but smaller. And the best way to do that is to keep the money in the hands of the people. I have to thank the Senate majority for not allowing the income tax to go through. But the PFD is still outstanding. That needs to go back into the hands of the people. That is very, very important to keep the money best spent by the people. The other thing that came out of the Senate version, which I find extremely offensive, is the emptying of the statutory budget reserve, the SBR, of $288 million. That cannot go through to pay the refundable oil and gas tax credits, which have been going on for way too long, and we cannot afford them. So in conclusion, please, please cut the unnecessary spending. Stop the oil and gas tax credit. Get stronger, more efficient, build down. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Good. Does the committee have any questions? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Is there anybody else in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anybody else online who would like to testify? I don't see anybody. Okay, with that, we will go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 23, which is the capital budget. And I'd like to thank the testifiers who participated today. At this time, we will set aside SB 23. And I'd like to let members know that amendments for SB 23 will be due to Jane Pearson in my office on May 15th, Monday, at 6 p.m. And with that, our next regularly scheduled...
Mr. Chairman, real quick.
Sure, Representative Wilson.
So there's projects in here that I honestly don't know what they are. Is there any place
over the weekend, because we're not going to probably be able to find anybody in their offices, that we can understand the projects that are in there. And also, we're using a lot of different funds. Is there any place that we can go and say how much, find out what's in, how much money is in those funds and whether or not we're draining them or what? Because it's really hard to make those determinations without that information.
And I believe people will be available. Certainly my staff in my office will be available. I think some of the other folks in Ledge Finance will be. But let me just take a brief at ease to make sure that they are available, and then we'll come back on record. House Finance is brief at ease. Okay, House Finance is back on record. Ledge Finance will be available over the weekend. Ledge Legal will be available to help write amendments. My staff, Paul LeBoul, will get a email out to the Finance Committee members. He'll get some information and provide updates to the committee members. Any other questions for the committee? Seeing none, our next regularly scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is on Monday, May 15th at 1:30 p.m., and at that meeting we will be hearing HB 151, which is the Department of Health, Child in Need of Aid, Foster Care, and Child Protection Bill, SB 23, which is the Appropriations and the Capital Budget Bill, and then HB 105, the Denali-Wolf Special Management Area Bill, and with that, we will be adjourned at 2:59 p.m.